shortly.
My name's Tommy, I'm an editor. It's nice to be, I'm a bit nervous at the minute, but no, it's nice, I'm in a room full of my friends and that, you know, I mean, feel safe, nervous but safe, you know, and it's nice to say I've got friends now, and I can honestly say that all through my life I've had friends, like people I used with, people I associated with, you know, people who I've got something out of all the time, I manipulated and things like that, you know, I started using one substance or another about 12, 13 years old, and basically stopped using at 46, and in between that, I've done everything that addicts do, you know, I robbed my family, I robbed friends, I manipulated, I lied, I cheated, stuff like that, you know, and which I'm not proud of, but it's the only sort of choice I could make when I was using. I felt like I had no choice in my using. I just carried on. I didn't know how to stop. And I can remember one of the first times I realised that there was something wrong with me, and I was about 7 or 8 years old, and walking down with a few friends, or one friend actually, and we see these people on the other side of the road. It was blazing hot summer, and we had shorts out on, they had coats on, and they're hunched over there in a rush. And my mate knew them. And he said, see that tall one over there? He sold half his bedroom for skag. And I didn't have a clue what it was, didn't know what it was. You know, it was skag, and he was quite disgusted, but I was quite intrigued. You know, and that's when my addict sort of really kicked in. It's like, you sold half your bedroom, it's got to be good drugs. You know what I mean? That's what I do, that's the truth. My head went, that's got to be all right. You know, I didn't like the fact he sold half his bedroom sort of thing, but the fact it's got to be good, you just want to do that sort of stuff, you know. And that night I went and tried it. That night I went and tried it, and I don't think I even knew what it was. I think, to me it could have been shit on a stick, to be honest. You know, it wouldn't matter. It was like it was something I needed to try, and I did. And the truth is, I didn't really like it at first, but I persisted. You know, until I did. You know, and carried on. But but in my using, some sad stuff happened in that. And to me, my using was basically, I thought I was enjoying it. I thought I had a passion for life, and I'd go out and get the money and do all the stuff I need to do, so I could take the drugs. And because when I went out to buy drugs to use, it was always going to be the best one. The next one was always going to be that great one that I've been looking for. Do you know what I mean? And I'd go through all the preparation and do it all right and get everything ready, you know, stuff there and stuff there. And it never was perfect. But I'll still try again. I'm going to get it right one of these days, you know. And then, I remember my dad was ill. He was dying of cancer, and I remember, I don't know to this day if I really knew how bad it was or if I just ignored it because it interfered with my using, you know. And my family were up the hospital all the time, and I wasn't. I went up there once, and I was quite upset, to tell the truth, and, he was over a couple of years, and they found out that I was using, and my dad came home and from hospital, and sat with me during the night time and gave me sleeping pills to get me clean, because I couldn't sleep. And my habit weren't that big at the time. I thought it was. It wasn't that big. And it probably took a night before I'd sleep again. But I carried on taking the pills off him. This man was dying, but he needed his pills to be given to me, his son, to try and get him clean. And I would just keep taking them, keep them in my pocket and take them in a bundle, in one go sort of thing, and then do it all again, And that's what I do, anything I do has to benefit me when I use. It's only about me, it's only about what I can get out of it and that. And I had many attempts at trying to get clean, when my daughter was born I tried to get clean, and I would get off the drugs, and that was all it was about. I don't think I even wanted to get clean. What I wanted to do was, didn't have an habit. I wanted to use still, but I just didn't want the habit, do you know what I mean? So I would get clean, and most of the time it was laying on the sofa and have people wait on me because I'm dying and all that sort of stuff, and I get clean for a couple of weeks, and I think, I could use up on the weekend if I'm working or something like that, just payday, and that's what I sort of did, and obviously payday went into Saturday, Sunday, then Monday, and lose my job, and that's how it went on all the time, and it started getting really, really bad, in my 20s, I had a daughter, I was never at home. I had a partner who was just screaming at me all the time because I was just spending all the money on drugs and thinking I'm still a good father because I'm giving a score here and there. Do you know what I mean? That was it. And she left. She had to do my daughter and she left. And, for their own safety sort of thing, I suppose, they'd take it away. And I just used on that because they abandoned me. I've been abandoned. Do you know what I mean? How dare they? And then when I was 30, I first went into treatment. And my first real conscientism asked for help, And I went into treatment and they told me about coming to meetings. And I turned up in the meetings and I remember how scared I was walking to that first meeting. It was terrifying. I had to walk past people. Well, I couldn't walk past people. And so I got there an hour early and walked in 10 minutes late because I couldn't walk past people smoking outside, you know, that fear. And I sat at these meetings. I remember thinking that, what can this meeting do for me that the rehab can't? I'm in a rehab. That's going to save me, the rehab, you know, sitting in this meeting. Because I thought, if I just turn up, that's enough. The meetings, you know, and just sit my ass on a chair is enough for me, is enough to do what they've asked me to do. And obviously it wasn't, you know, and then many sort of relapses. I always come back to the rooms. I had friends who I'd seen in the meetings who I'd used with, who'd used like me, who'd done the same sort of things. There was no excuse, and it was 5 years clean, a couple of years clean. So I had the evidence that this worked, you know, I found every excuse not to. I was just still, I had this belief that I was different. And not just because I thought I'd get away with it, but I thought, this won't work for me, there's something wrong with me. There's something not right with me that this, you know, so this won't work for me. Like, no, good luck to all them, you know, but this just don't work for me. Now I've sat in a meeting, now I've sat and looked at the clock and couldn't wait to get out. And no, it didn't work for me, how come, you know? And, so that's what I did, you know, I just kept going back into a detox, many detoxes, you know. But all for me, it was just about putting drugs down. It was, that's all it was. It wasn't about an illness. I thought it was an illness, it was a cop-out. You know, this disease, a cop-out. Just taking drugs, mate. You know, sort yourself out. It was like that. And then I got to a place where I was just so desperate. You know, I said, when I was younger, I had that God of my understanding, which my understanding was, he came in when I needed help getting money, getting bail, you know, whatever I to score because the dealer took too long. That was my God of my understanding, you know, when I needed. And he had to do what I said. You know what I mean? It wasn't my... And then, you know, sort of many years down the line, I'm praying to this God to not wake up in the morning. You know, it went from one extreme to the other, and I don't know how it happened, and I really don't. It just seemed to melt. My using was very monotonous and bland, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't exciting. I wasn't travelling the world and getting nicked in far off ports and all stuff. I'm like that. Mine was just sitting in the bedroom mainly, with Brian down, with the telly on, you know, dying inside and not knowing how to ask anything about it. And then lucky enough for me, I got so desperate that I was willing to try anything, you know. I was willing to come back to a meeting. I went into a detox and I came out of the meeting. I came out of the detox and went to my first meeting the next day. And I knew I had to throw myself into it. And I've always had this fear of talking and, you know, talking in front of people and that. Even in school, reading out, and didn't like doing it. And but I thought, I forced myself. And I mumbled something for 10 seconds, you know, and then spent another sort of 45 minutes, what have I said? Do you know what I mean? And but I'd done that each night. I'd done it each night at meetings and that. And now I started to realise I could go meetings during the day and started doing that. And still, though, even like, you know, even a few weeks in, that fear walking to me, it's the hardest thing I've ever done is walking to a meeting, you know, and putting my hands up and going, you know what, I'm in trouble here. I need help, do you know what I mean? Because I do need help. I can't do this on my own. When I do this on my own, I use. It's as simple as that, you know. And, so I took a commitment on, and that was a big change for me because I went there one week. I didn't want to take the commitment on because it was greater, and I deserve better than that because I'm special, do you know what I mean? But I took the greeter, and next week I was hugging people, which I don't like hugging people. I don't like people very much, you know what I mean? And I sort of hugged these people, and they said my name and that. And the following week, they was going, all right, so I'm all right. And it was a change for me. People know my name. People were interested. Well, they said they was interested in what, you know, and how I felt and that, do you know what I mean? And it was just a complete flip. It was like, I feel part of something. I feel part of this fellowship now, do you know what I mean? Really quickly it happened for me, you know, and I started trying myself out, why didn't I do this 18 years before, you know, when I tried this sort of thing, but I wasn't willing, I wasn't sort of open-minded enough to listen, you know, and this sort of stuff, since I came in, you know, my life's changed such a lot, you know, it really has. I'm quite happy with myself, I quite like myself, which is you know, big for me, it really is, you know. I've hated myself all my life. And one thing happened, you know, recently, which shows a change in me. When my dad died, you know, I just used, as simple as that, you know, I just used, that's all I did. My mum was ill recently, and she was dying, you know, and I'm lucky enough, I spoke to someone, and I said, like, no, I need to make amends, you know, she's really ill and that, and he said, look, just be there for her until you love her. So that's what I did for, you know, for a few weeks. I was telling her I love her and things like that, and she was in hospital, and I got to the hospital one day, and she'd been really bad for a few days, and they said to her, no, she's not going to make it. If you need people up here, bring them up now, because it's not my last one. You know, and I was lucky enough to be able to hold my mum's hand when she took her last breath. You know, just be there for her, be supportive for her, you know, because I've never done that for my mum. I took for my mum, you know. She never turned me away, but I just took for my mum. And I was managed to stand there, and it was the scariest thing about, you know, apart from what Mrs. Meeks, and one of the scariest things I've ever done is stay there. Because my initial reaction was to bowl. Now, I can't deal with this, do you know what I mean? I need my charge all of a sudden. I need this, I need that. But I didn't. I had nothing in me to have that courage to stay there, hold her hand, and just be supportive and just be selfless for once in my life. You know, because I've never done that. I've never been selfless. And, you know, I don't want to say it's amazing because my mum died. You know, it wasn't amazing, but it was something that I could do for her for once, you know. And then to deal with the funeral stuff and that, and to be there for my family and that, and, you know, and then be there for me, it was really brought us together at that time, and, you know, and then I've still got to, at the same time, I've still got to look at my brother who's out there using, and he's full on, you know, and see him fall apart at the funeral and be supportive for him, because I've been there, I've done it with my dad, the same thing, but, you know, this is what NA has given me. It's given me the courage to do the right thing, you know, to do the right thing. And it's given me, it's given me friends. It's given me a purpose in life. It's given me a freedom from using. You know, it really has. I'm a grateful, grateful recovering addict today. You know, I love this program. You know, I love NA. I'm happy, clappy. You know, I'm just that sort of person at the moment. And, you know, I couldn't have done anything I've done, you know, in the last sort of 15 months, I couldn't have done it without the support of NA, you know. I support my family because I get support from people in these rooms. You know, for people who just come in, I mean, someone said the other day to me, you know, about keep coming back. He said, instead of keep coming back, turn up and stay. Just turn up and stay. Don't keep coming back all the time. You know, stay here, put the effort in, and the rewards are massive. I'll leave it there for some time.